I've now described the present state of the world. The animated beings that exist within these regions are just as worthy of our consideration. But perhaps the human mind cannot encompass so vast a subject. India possesses many wonders. Megasthenes has provided accounts of the country. He claims there is a race living on an Indian mountain called Nulo who have inverted feet with 8 toes on each foot. On other mountains, there are a tribe of men who have dog heads. These men clothe themselves in the skins of wild beasts. Instead of speaking, they bark, and since they have claws, they live by hunting and catching birds. Another description of these dog-headed men comes from an account by Theseus, the Greek physician to the Persian king. Theseus claims that this race has a population of more than 12,000. Theseus also says that there is a race in India with women who only become pregnant once in their lifetime. The hair of their children becomes white soon after they are born. Theseus also writes about another race of men in India known as the Monocoli. These people have only one leg, but are able to leap with surprising agility. Another Indian population is called the Shadowfoots. This is because they lie on their backs and use the shade of their feet to protect themselves from the extreme heat of the sun. Theseus claims that this population lives near the Troglodytes, and further west, there are a tribe without necks who have eyes in their shoulders. Tauron describes another Indian race called the Coromandeh. They live in the woods and have no proper voice. Instead, they cry out in a frightful screech. Their bodies are covered in hair, their eyes are a sea-green colour, and their teeth are dog-like. Eudoxus claims that, in the southern parts of India, the men have feet a cubit long, but the women have feet that are so tiny they're called Strathopodes, or sparrow feet. Megasthenes says that there are also nomads in India called the Sirati. These people have holes in their faces instead of nostrils and flexible feet that can move like the body of a serpent. At the eastern extremity of India, near the source of the Ganges, there is a nation called the Astomi. These people have no mouths. Their bodies are rough and hairy, and they cover themselves with a soft material plucked from the leaves of trees. The Astomi gain sustenance by breathing in odors through their open nostrils. They do not require meat or drink, and when they undertake a long journey, they carry only wild roots, flowers, and fruit, which they consume by smell. However, a powerful smelling odor could cause them instant death. It is said that there are other races beyond these people, existing at the very edge of the Himalayan mountains. These are the Trispithami and the Pygmies. The two races do not exceed 3 spans or about 27 inches in height. They live in a healthy environment, irrigated by a perpetual spring, while the mountains shelter their habitat from the northern winds. Indeed, these are the people that Homer describes as waging war against the cranes. It is said that every spring they ride down to the seashore on the backs of rams and goats. Armed with arrows, they destroy the eggs and chicks of the birds. The expedition lasts 3 months, but the action allows them to control the increasing multitudes of cranes. It's said that their houses are built of mud, mixed with feathers and eggshells. The Sarmatians and the Essedones occupy lands leading to the Azov Sea. The Rapaean Mountains exist to the north of these people, in a region called the Tauroferous. Feather-like snow continually falls in this part of the world. The region is condemned by nature and has been plunged into dense darkness, subject only to frosts. But even beyond this, there is said to be a race called the Hyperboreans. The Hyperboreans are a contented people who are said to live to extreme old age and are famous for legendary wonders. These Hyperboreans occupy the extreme limits of the Earth. The sky is said to pivot around their territory, so they will witness the full revolutions of the stars. They receive 6 months of daylight when the sun is never absent from view. Any authorities who locate the Hyperboreans in a region with 6 months of daylight say that for them, they sow in the morning, reap at midday, and pluck the fruit from the trees when they experience sunset. Then they retreat into their grottos to endure the long night of winter. Hyperboreans live in woods and groves. They worship several gods in large congregations. Their society does not know discord or sorrow, and death comes to them only when they have obtained an overabundance of life. When this occurs, they hold a banquet, affirm their old age with a celebration, then leap from a certain rock into the sea. They think that this is the most blissful form of burial. Some authorities have located the Hyperboreans not in Europe, but on the northern coast of Asia. This is because there is an Asiatic people who share their customs and occupy a similar location. Other authorities have located the Hyperboreans somewhere midday between the position where the sun disappears at sunset in the Antipodes and reappears at our sunrise. But this is impossible, because an enormous expanse of sea exists between these positions. It is not possible to doubt the existence of the Hyperboreans. Many authorities record that they regularly sent the first fruits of their harvests to the Greek sanctuary at Delos. They present these offerings to Apollo, who they revere and worship above other gods. The gifts used to be brought by highly venerated virgins, who spent years making the journey, received and protected by various nations on their route to Greece. But the tradition ended when this good faith was violated. The Hyperboreans therefore began a new custom and deposited their offerings at the nearest frontiers of neighboring peoples. A succession of different peoples passed these items on to adjoining communities until the offerings finally reached Delos. But later on, this practice too passed out of use. Men are frequently seen in the deserts of Africa who can vanish in an instant. Crates of Pergamos records that some of the troglodytes, cave dwellers who live beyond Ethiopia, are able to outrun a horse. He also claims that one of the Ethiopian tribes, known as the Cerbatae, stand more than 8 cubits tall. There is a tribe of Ethiopian nomads who dwell about 20 days inland from the ocean called Menissimi, and they live on the milk of the animal which we call Cynocephalus, the dog-headed baboons. They rear large flocks of these creatures, but they kill all the males, except those required for breeding. South of Meroe, there is an island in the Nile belonging to the Sembritae, which is governed by a queen. Beyond this are the Sesambri, in whose country all the four-footed animals, even the elephants, have no ears. On the African side, between the Nile and the Red Sea, the Temfani have a dog as their king, and guess his commands from his movements, a sacred animal. All the rest of this country is uninhabited, and beyond this territory, regions are purely imaginary. Towards the west are the Negroi, whose king is said to have only one eye that is set in the middle of his forehead. Then there are the wild beast-eaters, who live mainly on the flesh of panthers and lions. After them live the eat-alls, who devour everything. Next are the man-eaters, who consume human flesh, then the dog-milkers, who have dogs' heads. The Artepiditae are said to have four legs and rove around like wild animals. Then there are the Hesperioi and the Perusi, who are said to occupy the frontiers of Mauritania. Some of these people live only on locusts, dried by smoke and salted to preserve them for a year. These people do not generally live beyond the age of 40. There are also true accounts that confirm females have become males. The Annals of Rome record that during the consulship of Publius Licinius Crassus and Gaius Cassius Longinus, a girl at Casinum was changed into a boy. The parents observed this fact, and at the orders of the augurs, the child was conveyed to a deserted island. Licinius Mucianus has recorded that he personally saw a man named Orescon at Argos who had been given the female birth name Arescusa. Arescusa had actually married a husband, but when she had grown a beard and developed masculine attributes, he had taken another wife. Mucianus also saw a boy at Smyrna who had been through the same process. When I was in Africa, I actually saw a person who had been turned into a male on the day of their marriage to a husband. This was Lucius Constitius, a citizen of Thysdrytum. After we have passed the Caspian Sea and the Scythian Ocean, our course takes an easterly direction. Here are the abodes of the Scythian anthropophagi, who feed on human flesh. Hence it is that all around them consists of vast deserts, inhabited by multitudes of wild beasts, which continually lying in wait ready to fall upon human beings just as savage as themselves. After leaving these, we again come to a nation of the Scythians, and then again to desert tracks occupied by wild beasts. It is not, however, before we have traversed very nearly one half of the coast that looks towards the northeast that we find it occupied by inhabitants. The first people that are known of here are the Seres, so famous for the wool that is found in their forests. After steeping it in water, they comb off a white down that adheres to the leaves, and then to the females of their part of the world, they give the twofold task of unraveling their textures and of weaving the threads afresh. So manifold is the labour, and so distant are the regions which are thus ransacked, to supply a dress through which our ladies may in public display their charms. The Seres are of inoffensive manners, bearing a strong resemblance therein to all savage nations. They shun all intercourse with the rest of mankind, and await the approach of those who wish to traffic with them. But now I will describe other animals, beginning with land creatures. The elephant is the largest of them, with an intelligence that is close to that of man. It understands the language of its country, it obeys commands, and it remembers all the tasks it is taught. It can also comprehend love and glory more than most men. It possesses notions of honesty, forethought, and fairness. The animal also has a religious respect for the stars, and it venerates the sun and moon. Inland from the deserts of Syrtes and in Mauritania, Africa produces elephants. But India produces the largest elephants, along with dragons. These dragons are continuously at war with elephants, and due to their vast size, they can easily encircle them with their coils. This contest is fatal to both creatures, since the dead elephant will fall to the ground and with its vast bulk crush the dragon entwined around its body. Every animal exhibits a keen perception and forethought for its own advantage, but these qualities are remarkably advanced in the dragon. This creature endures many difficulties. It will slowly climb to a vast height in the trees overlooking the road. Then, when it senses footsteps, it will suddenly drop down to catch, then consume its victim. The elephant knows that it cannot break free from the coils of the dragon, so it searches for trees or rocks against which it can scrub itself free. But the dragon is aware of this and tries to confine the legs of the elephant with the powerful sinews of its tail. Meanwhile, the elephant tries to disentangle itself with its trunk, but the dragon thrusts its head into the nostrils of the trunk, wounding a vital part of its opponent and causing the elephant to suffocate. Indeed, if a dragon is surprised, it will raise itself up, face its opponent and strike for the eyes. This is the reason why many elephants are so often found blind. The poor creatures will wander about in hunger and hardship until they are reduced to skeletal forms. Why does nature create such mighty strife and conflict? Perhaps it is only for the spectacle of seeing such vast opponents in combat against one another. There are also dragons in Ethiopia. They are generally smaller, being only 20 cubits long. This is not surprising, but it is strange that Juba thought that Ethiopian dragons had crests. The Ethiopians call these creatures Asakiai, and they can be seen on the coast coiled and twisted together into clusters like wickerwork. When four or five dragons weave themselves into this structure, they embark upon the sea, stretching their heads above the water. The tide then takes them across the sea to Arabia, where they find better nourishment. There's also a reptile called the basilisk that has the ability to kill men with a single glance. This creature, which inhabits Cyrene, is barely 12 inches long, with a distinctive white spot on its head that resembles a crown. Whenever it hisses, all the other serpents flee. It does not crawl on its belly like other reptiles, for the basilisk stands upright, with only the lower part of its body touching the ground. It destroys all foliage that it touches or breathes upon. Its poisonous presence desiccates grass and splits apart stones. It is said that if a man on horseback were to kill one of these animals with a spear, the poison would race up the weapon and instantly kill him and his mount. But the smell of a weasel is fatal to this monster, and the following method of destroying them has been tried with success. Their underground passages are detected by the condition of surrounding foliage. A weasel is thrown into the hole, destroying the basilisk by its scent, but dying in this struggle of nature against itself. The slain bodies of basilisks have been brought to royal authorities for inspection, so it seems that nature has contrived to give every poison its own particular antidote and countermeasure. Now, Ethiopia produces not only numerous lynxes, but also the Sphinx. This creature has brown hair and two mammary glands. Ethiopia has monkeys with black faces, donkey-like hair, and a voice unlike any other animal. The country also has oxen, like the beasts of India, except they have one horn, or sometimes three. Indeed, Ethiopia is inhabited by many other monstrous animals, including horses with wings, which sometimes have horns. They are called Pegasi. There is also the Leucrocotta, a wild beast with extraordinary swiftness. It is the size of a wild donkey, with the legs of a stag and cloven hooves, but its neck, tail, and chest are lion-like. Its head is the shape of a badger's snout, but its mouth is hinged to split open as far as its ears. Its jaws are formed by a single serrated bone rather than individual teeth, and it is said this animal can also imitate the human voice. Ethiopia also possesses an animal called the Yael. It is the size of a hippo, but is black or brown in color and has the tail of an elephant. The Yael has jaws like a wild boar and movable horns that are a cubit long. It can change the direction of these horns in combat to point forward or sideways to always face an opponent. Theseus describes another animal found in Ethiopia, which he calls the manticore. The manticore has a triple row of teeth that converge like a comb. It has the face and ears of a man, but its eyes are blue, and its skin is blood red. It has the body of a lion and a tail ending in a scorpion's sting. The voice of a manticore sounds like a combination between a flute and a trumpet. It is also incredibly swift and enjoys feeding on human flesh. Juba records that Ethiopian manticores also have the ability to imitate human speech. In the country of the Western Ethiopians, there is a river named Nigris, which is said to flow into the Nile. A wild beast called the Katoblepas lives where this river emerges from the ground. The animal is of moderate size, with slow-moving limbs and a heavy head. Consequently, it struggles to look upward, so it walks around with its head bent forward, looking down. Indeed, this is fortunate, because the Katoblepas has the power to destroy mankind. Anyone who looks into his eyes will immediately drop down to the ground dead. In India, there are livestock with solid hooves and a single horn, unicorns. There is also a wild beast called the axin that has fur like a fawn, but it is white with numerous pale markings. This animal is thought to be sacred to the god Bacchus. An Indian people called the Orcians hunt an ape with white hair and a very fierce animal called the Monoceros. The Monoceros has the body of a horse instead of a stag, feet of an elephant and tail of a boar. It makes a deep lowing noise, and a single black horn, 2 cubits long, projects from the middle of its forehead. It is said that this wild animal can never be captured alive. It is a well-known fact that during the Punic War, a serpent 120 feet long was captured by the Roman army at the River Bagrada, near Carthage in 255 BC. Marcus Atilius Regulus attacked the creature like he was besieging a fortress, pounding it with ballistae and other war engines. Its skin and jaws were preserved in a temple at Rome until the Numantine War in 154 BC. Indeed, the serpents seen in Rome in current times make these accounts seem credible. The creatures known as boa can grow to a vast size, even in Italy. One of these boa was killed on the Vatican Hill during the reign of the Emperor Claudius, and an entire child was found in its stomach. The Indian Ocean contains the largest number of sea animals, including the largest creatures in existence. There are whales 3 acres in size and sharks 12 cubits long. The lobsters in these seas grow to 6 feet, and the eels in the Ganges can reach 30 feet in length. When Alexander the Great saw these creatures, he assembled his fleet in a battle line to engage them, as though they were a hostile navy. It seemed impossible to escape them by any other means, for warning shouts, loud noises, and other uproars had no effect. Only a violent collision, a strike from the prow of a ship, would rout these incoming creatures. Other accounts come from the admirals who served in the fleets of Alexander the Great. They record how the Gedrosi, who lived by the Arabis River, used the jaws of giant sea creatures to make their doorways. They also used the bones of these monsters as roof beams for their homes. Many of these creatures were 60 foot long. Large creatures resembling sheep also come ashore on that coast. They graze on the roots of bushes before returning to the sea. Some of these creatures have the heads of horses, others like donkeys or bulls, and they consume the crops on the shore. I cannot describe the orca as anything other than an enormous mass of flesh armed with teeth. Recently, an orca was seen in the port of Ostia, where it was killed by the Emperor Claudius himself. This occurred when the Emperor was building the new harbour. A ship was coming from Gaul with a cargo of animal skins. It was overturned near the construction site, for the orca was attracted by the decomposing hides and fed for several days until it was glutted. It lounged about in the shallows until, while pursuing prey, it became trapped by a sandbank. The creature therefore found it impossible to retreat, and it came closer to the shore until its back was seen above the water. It looked like the keel of a vessel turned upside down. Claudius ordered a great number of nets to be extended across the entrance of the harbour from shore to shore. Then he appeared with the Praetorian cohorts to present the assembled Roman people with a remarkable spectacle. His boats assailed the monster, while soldiers on board hurled lances at the creature. I myself saw one of the boats sunk by the waterspout, which the animal showered down upon it.